Connecticut Democrats, or Connecticrats, as they have never been called.
Welcome back to Kamalacrats, the CT Dems podcast. I'm David Kostick.
And I'm Tara Kamen.
So you hear what I did there at the top? I rebranded the show. That's how excited everyone is.
I think that this level of excitement is something that I haven't seen with Democrats in, I think, maybe 8 years. I mean, I can't remember this level of excitement even during the Obama years, I feel like. So it's been really, really great to see.
Yeah. So in the run-up to 2012 felt like this a little bit, as first Romney was actually doing quite well. And then it began snowballing, the excitement was there. But maybe that's because I'm like a campaign worker type person, not sort of rank and file and sort of the media environment and sort of the energy that you feel in interviews and all that stuff is palpable.
Right. And putting aside like the $200 million that her campaign raised in a week, which is just incredible, I feel like her team has done such an incredible job at using media and connecting to pop culture references like Charlie X's studio album Brat, and like really bringing in like the Gen Z energy and audience, which is something that I feel like Biden kind of struggled to tap. And she's just really proven that she can fill that deficit super well.
Yeah, it's one thing when, you know, a pop star maybe makes some comment or endorses or however you want to qualify that, but to be ready on the communications team and the digital team and everyone else to embrace that and turn around quickly and make it, you know, kind of a thing is a whole nother level of campaigning. It was impressive. It was absolutely impressive to see, and you know, fairly educational for your Gen X co-host here.
Right. And I think in a lot of ways too, I mean, I've been watching how she had, I mean, Kamala Harris has had several viral moments before all of this even happened, right? I'm thinking about like the coconut tree. I'm thinking about how people kind of really sensed that she had a lot of energy and whatever. But that energy at that time necessarily didn't feel positive. And then the way that they've been able to take that virality and then add such a positive spin and twist to it and really capitalize off of that has been really smart media work that I think that her team has been doing a great job at.
I've just stood in awe and watched it all come together. I mean, you know, the apprehension of the presumed nominee stepping down is that, well, now we've got a fight on our hands. And that didn't seem to happen. The party coalesced rather quickly around Kamala as the heir apparent and now the apparent nominee.
And hasn't it been great to see how they keep harping on the new weird commentary surrounding the GOP? It's been really awesome to see them take back the kind of name calling that we've been seeing in their direction, like the Sleepy Joe. I'm thinking about like Nasty Woman that Hillary Clinton was called, and really giving it right back and being like, you guys are weird for all of this and all of your desire to control people's lives in these strange right-wing kind of ways.
If you read through Project 2025 or through bullet points about Project 2025, it is a giant collection of like weird projection and I don't know, some sort of alternate fantasy world. It is absolutely creepy and weird. And so much of that has been around for so long, but the discourse was on Joe Biden appears to be old, which was factually true, and you couldn't get away from it. So take the debate. And we said this at the time. He went out there and lied 30, 50 times about just about everything. And then the things that he says, like, you know, everybody was happy to see Roe v. Wade overturned. This is someone who is so wildly out of touch with reality, and now to spin it back on him and call him, you know, using the weird phraseology is fantastic, because it does sort of encapsulate in a very concise way exactly what they're proposing, which is a series of very controlling things. And who wants to control other people? Weird people.
It's very, very true. And I think that movement was even better solidified by his VP pick as J.D. Vance, because he's someone that is really strange if you look at the way that he's developed throughout the party, like originally being like a very traditional sort of Republican and then being so opportunistic that his views constantly shifted. And I love just watching like the videos of him before he was picked as VP candidate and the things he was saying about Trump. and then how quickly things have changed for him just because he was provided with this opportunity.
It's more revealing about Trump as well, in that the choice is supposed to be go through a gauntlet of vetting and analysis so you know who you're bringing onto the ticket. And I don't think he knew. I don't think he had any idea. Guy won a Senate race in Ohio, which has trended remarkably far to the right in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years. And he won by a very narrow margin in a state where the governor won re-election by a very large margin. I forget what the gap was. But he underperformed the governor by like 15 points or something. Now, that's still a win in Ohio. So, okay, guy's a U.S. senator. I get it. But under the spotlight of a national audience and now going back to old photographs of him wearing, you know, the CCCP hammer and sickle T-shirt or things he has said about childless people over and over and over is so off-putting and so, frankly, weird that it's a liability. The guy's an absolute liability.
And especially about the childless thing, I think the Trump campaign, in a lot of ways, has been really struggling to get women's votes for a really good reason as well. And I think that Trump has kind of seen that in some ways. And I can see him kind of almost trying to soften his rhetoric on anti-abortion policies, or at least talking about anti-abortion policies, because he knows how wildly unpopular that is with women. But then J.D. Vance coming in with that childless cat lady's comment just completely ruined any kind of idea that Trump had that he could make any kind of progress with women, I think.
Well, just last night, Connecticut had our first statewide call of Connecticut Women for Harris. It was headlined by our Lieutenant Governor, Susan Bicewicz, our two members of Congress, Johanna Hayes and Rosa DeLauro, and Secretary of State Stephanie Thomas. Let's hear a little bit from each of them.
The excitement and the momentum around this candidacy is really palpable. And I would just tell you, in New Haven, just on the streets in New Haven, car stopped at the corner of church and chapel. Rosa, we're going to win. We're going to elect Kamala. People all over just coming up to me on the street, and which is such a sense of energy that we haven't stopped. We haven't really seen that for a while.
Let me tell you how very proud I am as the person who is second in command in the state of Connecticut to be here with all of you to support the second in command in our country and to be part of the historic effort to elect Kamala Harris as our first female president of the United States.
I am so excited to be a part of this movement. It is not a moment, it is a movement. And one day I will be able to say, I was a part of a group of women from Connecticut that helped elect the first woman to be president.
I am challenging every single person here to spread the gospel of voting to your friends and family, to your neighbors, to the people you only know a little bit. I'm challenging every person here to do what these campaigns need, not only what you'd like to do. I'm challenging every person here to get out of their comfort zone, because it's all up for grabs right now. And I don't need to tell you what's on the line.
People are hopeful. People are excited. People are taking ownership over the outcome of this election. And that's how democracy works. It's all of us rowing in the same direction. And that's why this call feels so good. It's like a sisterhood, where we have all decided collectively that we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that Kamala Harris is the next president of the United States.
Were you on the call?
Yes, I was on the call, and it was really, really great. It's so great to see this organization happening so fast and women really standing up for what they want and what they believe in. So it's an honor to be a part of that.
I could not believe the registrations and how quickly the event filled up. It's an indication. Look, Connecticut is 1% of the population of this country, and we had well over 1,000 people interested in joining that call. Multiply that out, that's like these nationwide calls you're seeing with 100,000 people joining. It is similar in scale here in our little blue state of people just really fired up and ready to go. And frankly, that should translate all the way down ticket. This week, a new voice here on the CT Dems podcast, Bridget Tulikangas, sat down and spoke with one of those candidates running in the 34th district for the Connecticut State Senate. This is her talk with Brandy Mandato.
The other day you posted a picture on Instagram that said, "Policy is my love language." So just expanding on that a little bit, what is your approach to politics, and you know, what got, like, why did you decide to get into this race?
That is such a good question. What is my approach to politics? My approach to politics for so long was to try to work around the politics to get to the heart of the matter. For more than 20 years, I've been focused on economic mobility for everyone, particularly for people with lots of barriers. And so my approach to politics was, how do we get everyone to work together to create really good policy and legislation that allows for all of us to have better choices? And so for a long time, I thought, well, that happens through relationship building. It happens through developing really good programs and getting them funded, and then partnering and really showing the power of that work, and then getting legislation and policy passed or informing that legislation and policy. And over the last few years, I've seen that the work has to happen in tandem. We need to have policymakers at the table as we're developing and designing, as we're iterating on this work, and bringing them into the fold early on so they can see the early impact and all it takes to sort of model good work. And so I bought that shirt a few years ago when there was lots of talk happening about, like, racial equality, and how, you know, sort of like what it means to be someone who stands up against things like racism and things like homophobia. And I kept thinking, like, okay, but where's the policy? How are you protecting people? How are you realizing this? How is this actually impacting people's lives? And I saw that shirt and I was like, yes, this is exactly what it means. When you are a policymaker, when you are a representative, when you are elected into a position of power, it's so much less about the politics and about the talk, and it's about doing the work. And so part of what brought me to this race was, we are at a moment in time where politics feels so divisive. And I've been surprised at how often, actually, when I've talked about the fact that I'm running in this race, the first question people have is, are you Republican or Democrat? And my approach has always been, like, what is your understanding of this issue I care about? And people aren't asking that question off the bat. They want to know because it defines so much in this day and age. And so really wanting to get back to, like, what are the issues? What matters? And how is what policymakers are doing directly impacting people's lives? And so at the end of the day, like, thoughts and prayers, a really great social media strategy, super not effective. I want to see policy change that directly impacts people's lives. And I want to be a policymaker that does that.
Well, I mean, going off that, what are the key issues your campaign is focusing on? And why is that most important to you?
The key issues are just really common sense issues, and have been front of mind for me for a long time because I grew up in Connecticut. Generations of my family have lived in Connecticut. And while I think some of the details have changed, the heart of the matter is the same. So high quality public education that is appropriately funded, where educators are supported, where every young person has an opportunity to be the best version of themselves, where one of the most important tools as a country that we have in terms of public education is not funded by things like bake sales, where we are being innovative and robust in our approach to education instead of sort of catching up and doing the bare minimum. And I don't know that, I don't think that anyone is intentionally, in terms of at the municipal level and in terms of practitioners, trying to shortchange education. I think there is a larger strategy to pull resources and funds from public education. But at the municipal level, we're really just trying to choose between, like, a fully staffed fire department and whether or not we have enough paras in the classroom. And that is a broken formula. That is a broken model. So really reevaluating how we think about equitable access to public education and ensuring that it is the bright star that it needs to be to allow for an incredibly well-educated a society where everyone can live up to their greatest potential. Healthcare is a critical priority, ensuring that healthcare is accessible. Having insurance is good. Being able to access that insurance, being able to access a primary care physician, a specialist in a reasonable amount of time. We know that our healthcare system was buckling under the pressure of demand before COVID. We know now that pressure has expanded exponentially. So thinking about how we provide a public option that folks can actually use that includes things like vision and dental, because it's absolutely absurd that people with good jobs and good insurance can't get their teeth taken care of. And often, like in my personal experience, have loved ones, teachers, nurses, who are just going to choose to have their teeth removed rather than treat them because it's easier and more affordable. That's absurd. So really pushing for legislation that ensures everyone has access to high quality healthcare, and that our healthcare providers and our workers are respected and treated fairly, and that we're addressing the overburdening of the healthcare system as it stands now. Critical to that is mental health care and support. At this moment in time, maybe more than ever, we are seeing the impact of social media. We're seeing the impact of isolation. We're seeing the impact of COVID on young people, on older people. And we're seeing just such an increase in anxiety and depression. We need resources and support. We need to continue to combat the stigma and to make sure we're providing real treatment options for people and building community, building opportunities for people to come together, to support each other and to talk about this stuff. So it's not just about the treatment, although that's a critical component of it. It's also about breaking down the stigma and ensuring that people have people to come to talk to support each other. That makes such a big difference. And then the work that I've been doing, like I said, for the last 20 years is economic and workforce development. So making sure that employers are creating quality jobs, making sure that everyone has access to the training and education that leads to those quality jobs, thinking about how AI impacts those jobs and how we prepare people to navigate that. There's so much opportunity through AI, and we've got to make sure folks see that as a tool and a resource rather than a barrier. When I was first thinking about my career, I thought I want to be Dana Scully because I really love the X-Files. And so I didn't have a ton of college prep. I didn't know a lot of people that went to college. And so I applied to the University of New Haven and I started school there. And I pretty quickly ran out of resources to finish college. I didn't have a lot of money. I always sort of laughed at the family contribution, a question on the student aid forms. So after a couple years, it was time for me to get to work. And growing up, my stepdad worked for Metro North. So we took the train a lot into the city. And taking the train from New Haven into Manhattan gives you a real interesting glimpse into the world. So you take the train and you look out the window and you see tents on the side of the train tracks where people are living. And then two stops away, you see a Bentley dealership. And then you arrive in Manhattan and you walk through Grand Central with that amazing ceiling and it feels like anything is possible. And there are people sleeping on the benches in Grand Central. At least there were when I was a kid. Now they're in jail. You walk outside of that building and there are some of the wealthiest companies in the world, right? These massive buildings. Again, it feels like anything is possible. And as a kid from a low-income family, I remember like very early being taught the lesson of like what access and opportunity can really create. And so I made it my mission to do what I could to make sure everyone had that opportunity.
So what's the first job you had that made you feel like you were making a difference?
My first job was working with foster youth in Western Massachusetts to give them an opportunity to see what a first job could be and to see what career options could look like. And that was really transformative for me because I was only a teenager at that point. I was 19. But seeing all of those options for myself and seeing the way that it sort of changed how those kids looked at the world was really inspiring. And so from that point on, I spent time working with just about every group with significant or unique barriers to employment and education. So I helped stand up the first trans economic empowerment initiative in the country, in the Bay Area, almost 20 years ago. I've worked with folks with disabilities, disabled veterans. I worked with one of the largest homeless serving organizations in New York City. And I currently work for a national organization that seeks to transform our education and workforce systems to ensure that all people have access to high quality jobs. And this work has been incredibly important and again, really transformative. I've been able to raise hundreds of millions of dollars for our public sector, some of our poorest zip codes, and folks that have often been left out of the conversation or not had seats at the table. We talk a lot about a skills gap, and I think what we find more and more is there's an opportunity gap. So the skills could be there. The knowledge, the ability is absolutely there. It's about creating that opportunity and giving everyone a chance. And that's what I've spent my career doing. And it has been really great over the last couple of years to come full circle and bring that back to Connecticut.
Right. And you're in District 34, fighting for that Senate seat. What are there any things you see through voter outreach or specifically to your campaign that you're seeing in 34 that you want to make a difference with?
We talked a little bit about it earlier, but I think we see this especially in 34, more commitment to public education, strategic investment in infrastructure so that there are high quality, good paying jobs in the district so that we see brain gain instead of brain drain. We see folks that are coming to District 34, staying in District 34 because there are opportunities here. And then affordability. So we see young people who grew up here able to buy houses, start families here, stay here. We see retirees able to continue to be able to afford the homes that they want to stay in and lived in their whole lives and continue to build their families here, be close to loved ones. And so I think along those lines, those are things that are critically important. And then socially and culturally, just wanting to be able to connect, more opportunities to come together to celebrate. To celebrate all the ways that we are alike, to celebrate the ways that we are different. When I moved to District 34, folks were sort of giving me a sense that maybe this wasn't the most open place in the state. Like maybe there was a culture here that was different than I had experienced before growing up in New Haven and Hamden. And when I got here, what I experienced was just an incredible, welcoming neighborhood, community, town, district, just incredible, hardworking people. And I think, again, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but that sort of letter next to your name has so often in the past 10 years, especially defined us. And when we move past that and talk about what we care about, what matters to us, what we want for our families, we are so much more alike than we are different. And so that's what I have found here. Good conversations, so much in common. I am so happy to be able to raise my family here in community with these folks.
This district has been held by the incumbent since 2020, and the office hasn't been held by a Democrat since 2002. What do you think that you're bringing to the table that will challenge him? And then why should voters really be interested?
I've been working my entire life for the good of all of us. I am results driven. I am proven and tested leader. I am not afraid of hard work. And I am, when it comes to my work, incredibly selfless. My life is better when everyone else's life is better. I am an older sister. And so I come to the idea of organizing and of service and of public service, especially as lifting all boats. And I see public service as an incredible honor. And so my approach to this is an act of service, and it would be my responsibility to step into this seat and do right by the district. I don't have personal long-term political aspirations. I see a district that is in need of help. I see a district that is in need of resources. And I see a district that is in need of someone who is willing to go to Hartford and work on our behalf. And I know that I can be that person. I have proven to be that leader in every aspect of my career. And this is a way that I can continue to serve my community.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking. It was a pleasure.
So good to chat with you. Thank you so much for having me.
If you want to help out Brandy, if you want to help out Jahana Hayes, if you want to help out anyone in the state of Connecticut or even in other states, please, please, please visit ctdems.org/events. You'll see all sorts of ways to get involved.
And here on the College Dem side of things, we are trying to put together a plan to do some canvassing in Pennsylvania, get some young Dems and College Dems out there. So if you are interested in any of that, please reach out to our Instagram, CollegeDemCT, and we would love to have you.
Yeah, we're going to be trying to get some calls going into Pennsylvania on a regular basis and then making a couple of trips ourselves with the CT Dems in the fall. It's essential. Everyone knows the game, right? Like, you can list out a bunch of states that are going to go into the Harris column. You can list out a bunch of states that are inexplicably going to go into the Trump column. And then it all plays out in places like Pennsylvania. So please join us and please help out your local candidates, too. Look, Connecticut legislature is where a lot of the action is taking place. That is where we have passed the Reproductive Rights Act. That is where we have passed paid family and medical leave. That is where we're doing a lot of good work for the people of Connecticut and for, you know, the Democratic cause. So if you want to join in, help get some folks elected to the Connecticut State Legislature. And again, ctdems.org/events, your place to do that. So, you know, we kind of have a long gap between each of these shows and something absolutely nuts happens each time. We'll try to get one more in before the convention, for the national convention. And after that, it's kind of the sprint to the finish.
Right. And I think my final words are don't be weird. Vote blue.
Have a good one. We'll see you next time.